we're back with another episode of First Pitch 305. I'm your host, Alex Aguirre, and joining me for episode 4 is the man, the myth, the legend, the man who runs it all, who is pulling all the strings behind the scenes here on Lemon City Live. He is like the Wizard of Oz. He's the man behind the curtain.
Edwin the big Garcia. Lemon, bro. The big lemon.
The big lemon. I love it. The big lemon. Edwin Garcia, welcome to First Pitch 305, episode 4.
Awesome, man. Awesome, man. Excited to be here. Thanks for giving me the call and letting me come on here and talk my favorite, which is baseball. So I don't know. Now that we changed, like, you know, our format with Lemon City and we're doing all these like topic specific shows now, the one thing that I kind of miss is that I don't get to just be like, hey, Gus, let's talk about baseball, you know, or like, let's do this. It's like, I got to leave that to you. I got to leave hockey to these guys and I got to focus on what my task is. But it's good, though, because everybody's being involved and it's creating some really cool things. But I'm happy to be here because it's opening day tomorrow. We get to talk a little baseball. There's been a ton of news and I really, dude, it's Marlins, man. This is, we'll see. We'll look back at the end of September and be like, God, what a great season or what a long, boring season. But right now we have that optimism right now because it's, you know, it's opening day. We're undefeated right now. Let's I want to build up. I want to have a good show. Everybody's in first place. I want to have a good show, you know, and the sky's the limit for this season, man. So let's have a great one.
Exactly. And we're recording live and it's the night before opening day 2024. It is probably, yep, for me, one of the most exciting moments of the year as a sports fan, especially to someone who loves baseball. And, you know, you mentioned before we got into our Marlins news, just to give a quick shout out to just Lemon City Live in general. We do have a lot of new shows out there. So for everyone listening to this show, you can catch, we have a hockey show as well. We have, you know, our soccer show as well. So we're branching out into different avenues. We obviously have this baseball podcast. So wherever you listen to your podcast, whether it's Apple, Spotify, catch us there or go on lemoncitylive.com to catch all these different podcasts for all these different sports. But yeah, no, yeah, Edwin, a lot of news has broken out recently with the Marlins. Yep. You know, let's dive into the one that happened today a couple hours ago with John Birdie, fan favorite, the longest tenured Marlin, I believe, or one of the longest tenured Marlins.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's 2019. I think he's been around. Yeah. Yeah.
He's traded to the Yankees.
Yeah, good for him. I mean, like, honestly, I go on Twitter, I read Marlins Twitter, and I'm like, oh, there's a lot of love for Birdie, and I get it. Very nice, yeah, guy, but like, dude, we lost our utility, you know, infielder here. We lost the guy who we plug and play everywhere. Like, he's good, but he's not, you know, like, I don't know. I guess I wasn't as attached to him, you know what I mean? But I'll miss him because he provided, unlike some other guys that we've had during his tenure here that, you know, pretty much were in the same role. At least you can count on him. Like, hey, he's going to come in and pinch run. You know, he's a threat to steal a base. He did lead the league in stolen bases one season for us. And, you know, mm-hmm, when guys got hurt, he stepped up. He was a good little plug and play guy that you could put anywhere on infield and outfield. So he'll be missed. But I will say I'm a little surprised at the outpouring of fan support for him. I was like, like, really? Like, y'all really like Birdie that much? I mean, okay. All right. You know, he had my favorite number, 2-5.
That is one of my favorite numbers, too. But I think here's the deal with John Birdie. I feel why he was a fan favorite, especially here, okay, in South Florida, where it's hard to, I guess, find fan favorites because no one's ever here for that long. They're always here for only a couple of seasons, practically.
Fair.
But that's one reason, though. And very rarely, I've noticed, especially Marlins, I feel like, you know, Philadelphia has these type of players, you know, like blue collar, like Detroit, blue collar type of cities. They love that gritty, roll up your sleeves type of player, lunch pail type of guys. And John Birdie, yeah, was your epitome of that. And if you look back in Marlins history, like, you know, it's not a long one, but if you look back on it, Marlins never really had that glue guy, you know, that Kevin Millar. He kind of had that folklore with Boston, you know, that Dave Roberts, you know, with Boston again, like those type of like gritty, underrated players that make big plays and they come up big and you just plug them in and they make an impact where they're stealing a base, good defensive play, getting a base hit in a clutch moment. And John Birdie was kind of like that. And he was coming off his best season last year, hitting .294, you know, and yeah, in a fairly large sample size for a utility player. And as you mentioned, he stole bases. He had his pants rolled up, always kind of like, you know, an old school baseball player. And
yeah, I did like the swag. Know, the swag was on point.
Yeah.
The white shoes with the black socks. Yeah, I'll give him
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So there was a very rare moment for a Marlins fan base to be attracted to a player like that. And give kudos. You know, I think Craig Mish tweeted about this as well, and he's right. Give kudos to the Marlins for finding a player like this. If you think about this, John Birdie was 28 years old already when he made his major league debut with the Toronto Blue Jays in 2018. Yeah. That was a 4-game sample size. He only played 4 games with them. So based off a long minor league career and 4 games in the major leagues with the Toronto Blue Jays, the Marlins took a flyer on him, and it panned out to a steady MLB career with one franchise. So that's the overall story, I guess, in with John Birdie is, wow, what a career he's made with, you know, a long minor league career that you don't, you know, when you're there in the minors until your late 20s, you start questioning yourself. You start questioning if it, you know, if it's still worth it to keep going. So I think that's the story overall, just the journey and then the grit and then staying there. That's the hardest part, staying in the majors. And he's been able to do it. And he's had a really good season, especially his last couple, hitting .294 last year and the season prior, as you mentioned, leading the league in steals with 41. So, you know, but I feel like his time was coming to an end. He was part of the previous tenure of ownership as well. So I just feel like it was time. It was time.
Like, I don't want to burst your kumbaya bubble about what a great story everything is for Birdie. But if I tell anybody, hey, who John Birdie is, can they even tell
they're
me?
Not gonna know who he is. Played?
They're not gonna know who he is. They're not gonna even the guys who do know. Like when you think of John Birdie, where do you think of him playing? Where does he play? What position do you when you look back
when
at
I think
John
of John Birdie
highlights in your head? Yeah, where is he playing? Two positions.
See?
Go ahead. Exactly.
Second base and center field.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's second base, center field. He's all over the place, which he's crucial to having him on the roster. It's very important because he's definitely there's a lot of games where guys need him to play because they got hurt. Whatever the case is, he's great. But again, I'm just a little shocked that like wow, like they're really talking about. I don't know. Maybe it's because tomorrow's opening day and it's the last move, so recency bias is that we're talking about him right now. But I am just a little surprised that. At this big takeaway, I just feel like
the opening day starter. I mean, opening day shortstop
for the Yankees. No, not for the Yankees though.
No, for the Marlins. For the Marlins,
he was. Oh yeah. Well,
late in spring training, you know, and then the emerge all this random, not random, all this Tim Anderson talks are emerging more and more, and I'm just like, And then the John Birdie news broke out a couple days later. So it's like, okay, I guess, you know, maybe the Marlins were kind of shopping him throughout the whole spring training and finally found something. But the Marlins in return got two prospects. It was a three-team deal involving the Rays as well. And the Marlins got the Yankees' number 28 prospect, John Cruz. And then they got another outfield prospect from the Rays. He's not in their top 30. His name is Shane Sasaki. So replenishing the farm system a little bit, positional players, which is good, you know, because Marlins, you know, still have some pretty good pitching in the minor league level. So, you know, at least you weren't going to get a big name out of for John Birdie. That okay, you don't have to burst my bubble there. I knew that, but but with at least they got a couple prospects in return, and at least you know because Marlins farm system badly needs the help.
I'll give him props for that because picking up two guys for a guy that, like I said, is just a utility guy, like that's an A-plus deal for the Marlins. Like if we're grading the trade itself, like, hey, A-plus.
Yeah.
These guys could turn out to be great or could turn out to be nothing, but you got value right now. You know, you don't know what the value is going to be later on, but right now, hey, two prospects for a guy that, like I said, didn't even have a solid position because he's going to play everywhere and he's going to do a bunch of things. And again, no knock on Birdie, but hey, Good luck with the Yankees. You know, you're going to have to shave the little beard. You can't have that anymore. Yeah. So we're going to get it's going to be like the fugitive over there, you know, just he's going to shave. We're not going to recognize him anymore, but good luck to him in New York. He's again, nice guy. I'm sure never heard a bad thing about him in the clubhouse or anything like that. So, but we'll see what these prospects, you know, turn into. But again, what really gets to me is not so much that he's leaving and the caliber of playing is like, damn, man. We're the same Marlins as always. Here we are. Just whatever we had that was even slightly, you know, that has some notoriety or somebody that we can like, hey, I know that guy. Oh, he's gone. You know, it's like, oh, that. Oh, he's gone. And what did we get? Prospects, because we never get another name in return. It's never like, hey, we traded this guy for this. Yeah. Like, oh, no. We got prospects. And it's like, oh. And then it's always like, oh, we don't have it. Like you said, we're replenishing the farm. It's like, wait, man. I feel like every time we do a trade, it's we're replenishing the farm. How non-plenished is this farm? You know what I mean? Because it's like, why are we always like just getting these guys?
No one's developing.
No one's developing. It really is. I think the Marlins had that horrible stretch. What was it, in the 2000s for like over 10 years where they struck out on every single first round pick that they made? I think that was the one that they did hit on was Adrian Gonzalez. But they traded him for a World Series championship. Or Urbina. You know, when they traded Urbina. So rightfully so. But A+ to the Marlins on the trade itself. Hopefully these cats will come in here and do something. I mean, I don't know. I'm not, like I said, I'm not losing any sleep for losing Birdie, but I just.
No, I won't either.
I'd like to see, you know, that we traded. Yeah, I just want to wake up one day and see a headline like, hey, Marlins trade for this guy. And I'm like, hey, I know that guy. Not like, who is this guy? You know, like, so we'll see. We'll see what happens.
At the end of the day, I think John Birdie was a minor league contract with a spring training invite. And it's like, it'll be nice to kind of like find someone that doesn't have to be through that route, you know, but that's, I guess, where the story is. And the story ends there at the end of the day. You know, John Birdie, good luck in New York. Thank you for, you know, a handful of fun, exciting years, you know, where we got to see you, you know, become a borderline everyday baseball MLB player when, you know, you were sticking it out in the minors until your late 20s. So good luck to him. And
34 years old too. Like, that's an A+ deal, you know, two prospects for a 34-year-old utility guy. Like, come on.
No, I think it was a great trade by Miami, and no surprise there that Peter Bendix, new Marlins president of baseball operations, he's, you know, involving his former team again in another trade. I think that's the third deal this offseason, because we're still technically in the offseason. Third deal in the offseason that he involves his former team. He did it with Vidal Brujan, that utility player who's going to make the opening day roster. Christian Betancourt, who is platooning the catching position with Nick Fortes. And now this trade and getting Shane Sasaki, one of the Rays outfield prospects. So a little bit of activity towards the back end of the offseason with this trade, getting signing Tim Anderson to a one-year deal. You know, and I guess now he will be the one manning shortstop. That's a clear given. So, and you know, speaking of shortstop, that goes into our next topic of conversation for this episode, and it's about our former shortstop with the Miami Marlins, Miguel Rojas. I know you wanted to get in on this, Edwin. Let's do it. Yes. Let's talk about this. The Jazz Chisholm Miggy Rowe media back and forth. I wouldn't call it a heated debate or a heated argument, but
it's heated. It's heated for baseball.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I think it is. Because you don't see this. You don't see guys openly taking shots in public on social media about current players. A lot of it is always after the fact with somebody who can't defend themselves or is no longer. No, Miguel Rojas is still on an active major league roster. Jazz Chisholm is, you know, the star of the team where Miguel Rojas used to play, and he's calling him out on. So I think this is fantastic telenovela stuff here that we don't normally get. You know what I mean? So on that aspect, it's spicy. It's super spicy because I like, wow, okay, hey, sure. You know, I wasn't expecting that. And to have it so close again, so close to the end of the season, really just like kicks up this opening day one another notch. You know, I can't wait to see what happens, especially now I'm circling that first Dodger Marlins game. You know, what's that pregame going to be like? And looking at the other guys, but I think giving people a bit of context as to what happened, if you don't know, it started with Jazz. He was on the Pivot podcast, I believe, and he was talking about how his first, which was. Let's take it for what it is. Jazz talking about his first three seasons in MLB being horrible and being like sad and, you know, not happy, not enjoying himself. This is a guy. Yeah. And this is a guy who, when you look at Jazz and you think about him, it's hard not to see the guy and think of him smiling. He is a personality. He's very happy. He's very, you know, he looks like he's having fun at all times. He is super talented. If healthy, the kid is like a baller. You know what I mean? He is transitioned last season from second base to center field, started off a little shaky, but he finished fantastic at the end of the season. He was great. Like, you were like, wow, he's that guy's a center fielder. And that's the hardest of the outfield positions to play is center field, you know, and he took it like a champ. Yeah, exactly. And to see where he's come from and what he's done is really like, man, I've grown to like Jazz a lot again. And he reminds me of why I like baseball. I like the big personalities. I like the Jazzes more than I like the Mike Trouts that are like, you know, I don't like I like the Jose Fernandez and not the McCanns from the was the catcher from the Braves that like got Ryan mad McCann. At Jose Fernandez because Ryan McCann for hitting home run. Like, they get and off he got my mad lawn. At
Carlos Gomez. You know, he never didn't let him cross home plate. He stopped in the middle of the baseline. It's like any guy who flipped a bat or pimped out a home run, he's like, you will not pass me. You will not step on the plate.
Give me Jazz. Give me Yasiel Puig. Give me those guys. I like watching him. And at the end of the day, like Jazz said, we're playing a kid's game, you know, or they're playing a kid's game. So let them have fun. Enjoy it. Now, with that comes the other side of it. If you enjoy it or you do too much, and then you can end up looking like a fool. But that's fine. You can also end up looking like a fool not doing anything and striking out three times in a game. So it doesn't matter.
Right.
It goes both ways. But Jazz was on the podcast. He talked about it. And then he singled out an incident in particular after he was talking about how the veteran players a few years ago and the so-called captain of the team, who he said wasn't any good. He's like, they're veterans. He's like, that's it. But they're like, this dude's not even good. You know, he's not even a good player. And he's obviously talking about Miguel Rojas, who during his tenure with the Marlins was the captain of the team. And he was talking about how those guys are just, you know, no fun guys. Like, oh, they would get on your case. They would scream at you. It felt like it was that transition from new school to old school. And it was just that middle in between there where it just like, yo, like, no, it's not working. And you got to figure out a different philosophy. But he talked about his 3 years there being horrible. And then he singled out one incident that happened with a player that he didn't name. But if you connect the dots here, you know, he's talking about Jesus Sanchez, where he, you know, hit a home run in his first game, I think. And then afterwards, he started doing what he called the Soto shuffle, which, you know, Juan Soto, dude's a beast. You know, he's earned the right to do his little shuffle and everything. And like you said, this is one of the guys that he admires. He wants to play like and stuff like that. That's great, man. And apparently he did the little shuffle and the old heads started getting on him afterwards and like bringing him down. And well, the podcast goes out, news comes out, and everybody's like, well, he's talking about Miguel Rojas and that's Jesus Sanchez. And now we have this, you know, media back and forth, which has been fantastic. And if you saw, Miguel Rojas also came out and he was on another podcast, I believe, Chris Rose one, I think, or something like that.
Chris Rose,
And he was talking about, you know, giving his side of the story, but it didn't look good for Miggy, what he was talking about, you know. And I'm curious to know from you, because I'll be honest, Miguel Rojas was not one of my favorite players. Nice guy. I know guys that know him personally in the media. I know that they are big fans of him, and he was very accessible to media, and he did a lot of stuff to those guys. But as an objective nonpartisan fan that I don't have a rooting interest because of where he's from or a personal connection to him, he drove me nuts as a player. He drove me absolutely nuts, because for the longest time while he was our captain, I always said he was John Birdie at best, bro. Like, he was not a guy who would start. He wouldn't be a starting shortstop on any team when he was the captain and the starting shortstop for the Marlins. Like, he wouldn't be the starting guy. He'd be a John Birdie on every other team. And again, I'm separating the personal and the guy, and I'm just talking about the player on the field and what I saw. His skills were, you know, he didn't have an elite glove to be, you know, that he had a solid major league glove, right, on defense. Yeah. And on hitting, he did, you know, he batted, I think his best season was his season that he was captain, he was batting like 230. Right, and he was batting like 230 his last season with us. And like he was like bouncing around from like 200 to 210 to 215. Then he would get a couple hits in a game and it would go up to like 230 and then drop again. It was such a fluctuation. I went to a lot of Marlins games, okay? So I saw him. And then what really got to me was when he was talking about, you know, when Jazz was saying that he was getting on his case for like doing the Soto shuffle. If you know Miguel Rojas, he has one of the longest little pregame rituals that any player does when they go up to bat. And that would drive me nuts. because he would go up there, he'd do this thing where he puts the bat on the floor, and he draws a line, and then he moves it, and then he does this, and he digs in, and then like 45 seconds later, he's finally up to bat, and I'm like, oh God. And to me, it's like his defense was like, oh, you shouldn't be, you know, focusing about doing the Soto shuffle and focus about performing. But dude, you're doing every little ritual and you're performing 236. Like, you needed to stop that stuff and focus on performing as well. You know what I'm saying? So that's where I was like, man, in this whole thing, I've been very, very pro jazz and very and I like it because it's not that I'm anti Miggy, but it's validated my Miggy criticisms that I've had. I don't know about you, how you feel about it, but I'm curious to see where you stand on this, because I was very vocal about it before and I kind of wanted to know your opinion.
No, and I appreciate you sharing that with me and how you feel about it. Always, I've been, you know, talking about it with people, and I've been feeling both sides of the room. I get it. Okay. I understand. But, like, you know, people who are in agreement with jazz and people who are more understanding of where Miguel Rojas is coming from. Here's my deal. Yeah. You know, when jazz first broke out, he was traded for Zach Gallen. I liked Zach Gallen. I really liked him a lot.
I love Zach Gallen.
Huge piece. And then look at it. Look now. Look now, I'm not like, I'm not trying to diminish what jazz has done, but that's where my heart
it's
is
worked out better
to
for
like,
them. Still,
right. So it's like, okay, now, but I'm still not counting jazz out yet. So the only thing I'm agreeing with Miggy is, and I might sound a little harsh here, and I'm not trying to, because I think jazz is so very, very talented player. I do agree with Miggy in a sense of like what has he done? Like, what has he done in a sense? Like, you know, like, in terms of, like, what has he
what
really
has
proven?
What has Miggy done? But what has Miggy done to be saying that? No. Like, if it was...
But at least somebody saying
else
it. At least somebody
has
saying
done
it.
Something. Yeah.
No, I get you. I get you completely. I'm not saying that Miggy deserves to say that, but he said it.
Yeah.
But he said it. So that's the difference
he
here.
He said it.
And a lot of people would agree with that. A lot of people would agree with that statement about what has jazz really, really done for Miami? Like, other than being on the MLB cover, MLB The Show cover, what has he produced for the Marlins on the field? I get it. He got hurt and he playing center field, and he's been bouncing on and off the IL for a long, long, for like, you know, throughout his career. And and I will give him props though, that he was he put it on himself as a leader to change positions and go play, as you mentioned, a very, very difficult position in a very spacious ballpark in Lone Depot and playing center field. So I tip my cap off to him for sure for doing that. But I do slightly agree with some of Miggy Rowe is that, like, okay, like, you need to prove something here. You can't just walk in here and think you're the big guy on campus. And then, like, right, is Miggy the right guy to be saying that on the Marlins squad? Absolutely not, based off what you're saying. So I'm feeling both sides of the room here. I'm not trying to pick a side, because I do slightly agree with you, but I also do slightly agree with Miggy here, you know, in terms of like, I get it. You're the new guy on campus and we traded for you. We have high expectations from you, but I do understand where Miggy's like, you got to earn it. Has Miggy earned it, I guess, from where you're coming from?
That's the thing, man.
Because,
that's the problem.
Because you're batting 236. So it's just the wrong voice saying what a lot of people have been thinking about jazz. Do I think this is what jazz is for the rest of his career? Absolutely not. I love jazz. Jazz has really grown on me. I do agree with you. It was rough in the beginning. Not rough. Well, it was rough. His career had a rough start. And then it was like, what? Why did we trade him? Why did we trade Zach Gallen? Look at Zach Gallen now. Like, Zach Gallen has been growing more and more as an ace. And so now he's a top five pitcher in the MLB. So there's still a lot of, you know, people who have doubt in jazz. That's the thing. It's not like he's won over the Miami fan base and MLB fans all over. He still needs to put a full season together where he's healthy, hitting home runs, stealing bases, hitting for decent average. I don't think he's going to hit for 300, but can he hit 270, 280 around there and be productive and be healthy all season? Absolutely. But he needs to do it. He needs to do it.
Yeah.
So I understand where Miggy Rowe is coming from.
I like how you prefaced it, and I like how you said it. Like, he said what a lot of people were thinking. He's just not the voice to say it. And that, I think, really sums up the whole thing here. That's what really, really sums it up. Is the criticism on jazz valid? Yeah, okay. What has he done? I can see why people would think that. But let me put in a case for jazz, okay? because I got his numbers here. All right.
Sure.
He's been in the league. He's coming on his technically it's going to be his fourth big league full season. Okay. Cause his first season was the COVID season. We're talking 20 games, but
mind you, sorry, the most games you, he's played in you, his,
yeah.
That COVID year, Jazz's rookie year, that was Miguel Rojas, best year average wise, hitting 304. And, so like there, that's and let's just put that in games. Perspective here, guys. Right, but like let's just put that in perspective here that he's coming off Miguel Rojas, ego wise, mental wise, he's coming off his best season in a really crappy season, a lot of negativity, a lot of like just bad stuff sports wise in general. It's COVID, it's the pandemic,
and his head was got able big. To
step up. Right. His head got big.
That's what it is. His head got big. Yeah. If we're talking 40 games here, if he played all 40, I don't even know, because I know a lot of the Marlins didn't play because at one point the whole Marlins team was sick with COVID and on quarantine. So I know that for I think if he's coming off that season where he did feel like he stepped up, and I get it. Miggy feels like I stepped up in 2020. I showed it 304. I don't know what his best season was in a full 162, what his best batting average is, but I know it's. It's not nowhere close to 24. In how many games?
132. So he had 526 at bats.
That's actually pretty decent.
And then his second best season is less at bats. He hit 290, but in 306 games, and he only had one home run and 26 RBIs. The 284 season, he had 5 home runs and 46 RBIs. He's only eclipsed 10 home runs once, which was in 2018. He hit 11 home runs for 53 RBIs, but he hit 252. He's never been a stolen base threat. Look, his max is 13 in 2021. So John Bird, because you're comparing to John Birdie, I kind of see it. Miguel has more pop, but John Birdie has more speed and can play more positions.
Slight more pop, because when you think of Miggy, you're not thinking of pop. You know what I mean? We got to compare it to a fair comparison here. When you think of Miggy, you don't think of pop. You don't think of batting average, and you don't think of an elite glove on defense. You don't think of stolen bases, but he's does enough of a lot of little things to be, you know, a good player, a major leaguer, which is better than, 99% of the people out there, right? Is that there's this, you're part of the select few that are major leaguer. Let's put it in perspective. I'm not going to sit here and be like, yeah, I could do that, you know, but. Hey, aside from that, looking at after that COVID season in 2021, Jazz played 124 games. That's the most he's played in a single season, okay? And this is where you got to see a bit of that, why we do value him, why we traded Zach Gallen for him, okay? We're talking 18 home runs, 53 RBIs, and a 248 average, 23 stolen bases. That was a small sample size, and that was essentially his rookie season, you know? Where, yeah, he played 124 games. He was also hurt. He was also, you know, rotating and not playing every day. I don't know if he was a late call-up or if there was some time missed or anything like that. But you saw it. And then here's the very telling number. The following season, which, remember, he was an all-star in 2022 because he got off to a good start before he got injured. In 2022, he finished with 14 home runs and 45 RBIs, pretty much similar numbers in half as many games. Because he only played 60 games as opposed to 124. So you see the progression. You see the pace. You see that, hey, okay, when people say, oh, he hasn't done it, do it for he's doing it. He just hasn't done it for a full season.
Notice how healthy
you're going to see the guy. Yeah. And then last season, 19 home runs, 51 RBIs. But again, he only played 97 games. So the dude has the pop. He has the legs. And we saw the biggest compliment that you can give Jazz was not any of that stuff, is the fact that he transitioned from, hey, this is the position you've been playing your whole life, or this is how it got you to the majors. We don't want you to do it anymore. Go play the outfield and do it well. And let me ask you, right now, who is the star? Where does Miggy Rowe play? He plays for the Dodgers, right? Yeah, but he plays for the Dodgers, right? And who's the shortstop for the Dodgers right now? Who's the shortstop for the Dodgers? It's Mookie Betts, okay? They moved Mookie from the outfield to shortstop over the shortstop that's been playing shortstop his whole life. So, again, perspective here. You know, we got to have it right. But I think the best thing that we could take from this is what you said, which is it was valid for him to say what he said because a lot of people probably felt that way, but he wasn't the voice to do it. But I think that I'm obviously more on the Jazz defense side here, but I can see what you're talking about, and I agree. I agree with some of those points, but again, I got to give shout-outs to everybody. Plus, I also have a selfie with Jazz, and that's why I kind of like him too. I got a really cool picture with him. But that's just messing around. But I want to see what Jazz. I really pray that he could put together a full season here, you know, because if he does, I really think that we're going to see some really, really cool stuff with him, man.
No, I totally agree with you. And I appreciate you, you know, giving your take on this and your side of it. And I've always believed in Jazz in terms of his talent. I clarified before, it was his health. It's always about his health. If he can stay healthy and put 140 games up there, you know, by when it's all said and done at the end of 2024, then you can see, as you mentioned, because he was on pace until he just gets hurt. You know, he is on pace to be a 30-30 guy if he can just stay healthy. You know, so
yeah, I think his 162 game average, his 162 game average, if he were to play 162 right now, would be 28 home runs, 83 RBIs, 32 stolen bases, and about 250 batting average. Not bad.
So it'll be nice if that 250 batting average can be a little bit higher, but 30-30. You know, he's a 30-30 guy.
Yeah.
So,
oh man, that'd be nice.
I'm praying like you that he could put it together, and that's the only question mark at the end of the day. It was no one, I think, has ever questioned his ability as a player. It was just, can you keep it together? Can it be put together for a full season? And the only, I guess, blemish, I guess people would say maybe early in his career was hitting left-handed pitchers. But come on, guys, like you got to let him develop. So like he wasn't a guy in his late 20s that he's like, okay, like enough is enough. Like we've given him too many chances. Yeah. Like there is still more room to grow. That's still the beauty of it with Jazz. That yes, there's still room to grow. But I guess coming from a fan base, let's be real here. We're desperate for a talented position player that's young. He's not really homegrown, but he's kind of homegrown-ish. You know, I guess we just got kind of desperate. And I guess that's where those feelings were coming from. I guess that people didn't want to speak up about, but Miggy Rowe did. So and I'm not gonna be
valid
on the fence here. I was one of them. I was one of those fans that was frustrated with his performance because like he's so good. That's the thing. It's not like you know, with Miggy Rowe that it's like you're frustrated, but it's like it's the same thing all the time. It's another 240, 250 season with five home runs, and you know, but I get it. Miggy Rowe is a good player though, as a fourth infielder on a playoff contending team. He's exactly what you want. He's exactly what you want, I think, coming as your utility guy, because that's where I think Miggy Rowe fits perfectly if he's gonna be like on a winning team. But
has a spot. He has a place in Major League Baseball on a roster for sure. But I'm just again, you shouldn't be the guy saying that, and that's where it's it's bad. So
and if you look at the Marlins record, you know, from since he got here from 2015. But before I guess that 2020 season when he stepped up, you know, or but from 2015 to 2019, if you look at the Marlins records, you know, like you can see why he is kind of was the everyday shortstop. But after Echeverria left the team, let's be honest here, guys, Danny Echeverria was still on the team when Miguel Rojas was there too, and Danny was the starting shortstop. Oh, and Donovan Solano was starting games over. Oh, Miguel Rojas. That's
right.
So, you know,
Solano.
What a renaissance Solano has had. Yeah.
Yeah. Good for him. But Echeverria, who I last checked, is playing in Mexico. I think I saw that today. Mm-hmm. He's playing in the Mexican League. Homie was like the Cuban Ozzie Smith, bro. Like when it comes to on defense, you know, that's as close as it gets, bro. That guy was a black hole there. There was no way, you know, Miggy was ever going to dethrone him there on defense.
Damn. But he was exciting to watch. Yeah.
Love that, man.
Miguel Rojas was a better hitter, Cuban I will say, than Danny.
Yeah. But too many of these Cuban guys are like that. Remember, like one of my favorite all-time guys to watch. Sometimes I'll just go on YouTube and type in Ray Ordóñez.
Ray Ordóñez.
No. Ray Ordóñez, bro. Go watch Ray Ordóñez highlights on YouTube, and it's just like the best thing you'll see, bro. The guy batted like .180, but man, he was on the SportsCenter top 10 like every night. Like that guy was just pulling stuff out of like just incredible diving, running, throwing, everything. Just a beast. And on defense, but just couldn't
hit. Play for the Mets,
man. Yeah, played for the Mets. I think he finished with the Rays or something like that. I don't remember, but yeah,
rings a bell.
Ray Ordóñez. Yeah, we're talking. This is like 90s, 2000s. You know, early 2000s at most. I don't know.
Yeah.
But dude was. Let me see, Ray. I'd have to look it up. This is not good radio or good. You know, podcast is somebody typing.
No, I do remember. But I'll tell you this though.
Yeah, 96 to 04.
96-04. Okay, yeah, because I took out an old MLB The Show game recently for my PlayStation Portable. It was one of the nostalgic moments I had. And I saw the name.
Nice.
I saw that. So I was like, did he play for the Mets? Something like that? Because that's where it hit me. So I'm like, perfect.
Okay. Yeah. Three-time Gold Glover. Three in a row from 97 to 99. So, yeah. That dude, I'm telling you, he was a beast.
Ray Ordóñez. Just did not think we were going to have a Ray Ordóñez shout out on this episode of First Pitch.
Yeah, I know.
But you never know.
Shout out to the man, bro. He's 53 years old now from La Habana, Cuba. But look, check him out, man. After the show, go on YouTube and thank me later. But let's talk about, you know, we got the Jazz stuff out. We got the Mickey Rose stuff, the Birdie stuff here.
It's done.
We got
it off our chest. Tomorrow, I feel a lot better now.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. What are we?
I'm glad we broke that down. But yeah, no, we got opening day to talk about. We got a lot of stuff actually to talk about, a lot of question marks that I talked about early in spring training in the first couple episodes of this season of First Pitch 305 that have not really been answered yet. On the contrary, things have actually worsened. Things have gotten so much worse in terms of the Marlins starting rotation because of injuries. So we all knew that Sandy was going to be out this season. So Edwin, I'm going to tell you this. Going into 2024, the Marlins are going with a rotation of Jesus Luzardo, Trevor Rogers, Ryan Weathers, and AJ Puk as your four, because right now that fifth spot is still up in the air. They're still kind of finalizing that. But pretty much four guys, all lefties, and those are your pretty much that core of your rotation going to 2024. Yeah. How do you feel about that? After the other names I've left out, like Braxton Garrett, Edward Cabrera, obviously Sandy. You know, so what's your feeling, you know, going to season with, you know, that core, the starting rotation built like that?
Honestly, it scares me. It really does. After Luzardo, it's a roller coaster ride of confidence there. We don't know Weathers. Yeah, I saw your dad pitch for the Marlins in the 90s. I don't know if you can pitch. I'm kind of curious to see. We'll find out. AJ Puk definitely wasn't a closer. I don't know if he's a middle reliever. He used to be a starter. I'm curious to see how he's going to... AJ Puk, to me, had all the things that I wanted in a closer, but just couldn't hold it on. Like, you could tell as the season went on, the confidence wasn't there. So I'm curious to see if he didn't have the... Because it felt like with Puk last season, it was a mental thing. So now we're asking him to do an even bigger mental thing, which is, hey, stop doing everything that you did and now try to be something completely different. How are you going to deal with that? You know, a spring return so far on him has been, you know, pretty good at times, but then we don't know. I don't take too much stock from how you perform in spring training.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to do. Yeah.
So, and then the four back to back to back to back lefties. Yeesh. but I want to see. So I think there's going to be a surprise there. I think there's going to be a surprise. I feel like one of those guys could step up. Because if there's one thing that the Marlins have been known for throughout their history is pitching. If you were to really think about the Marlins' development during season, it's been pitching. Whether it was Jose Fernandez coming up and, you know, being undefeated at home, basically. Or, you know, the emergence of a Josh Johnson or, you know, an A.J. Burnett. Right. Any of these guys that, man, who was the dude in the 2000s that used to sweat profusely? And
Scott Olsen.
Tip his hat, Scott Olsen. But Scott Olsen was serviceable. He was a good pitcher, you know? Like, whenever we struggled on offense, I felt like we've all...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I feel like maybe we still got some magic in there, some Marlins magic, that one of these guys will step up and be that next little surprise, like, oh, man, hey, Sixto, you know, in 2020, we like, hey, this guy, yeah, he was a little hyped up, but hey, overperformed. Can we get somebody to overperform? I hope so. I hope so. We have a history of it. Do I count on it? No. I'm not counting on it because it's not realistic.
It's tough to rely. A lot of question marks, especially with Trevor Rogers. He hasn't pitched in, you know, since the beginning of last season in an MLB game. You know, so but how is he going to look? AJ Puk, as you mentioned, how's he going to transition? So there's a lot of question marks on this roster. Brian Ahoing, he might be the fifth man. You know, Max Meyer, he got designated to the minors. Yeah, there's still a couple names thrown out there that can be that fifth guy. Yuri Perez as well. You know, he's still like, but he's kind of like battling something very mild. I think some light inflammation in the shoulder. Yeah.
I think they're being very careful with Yuri. Of course. I think they're just being very careful. And good reason. Especially because look, Sandy didn't have a Sandy season last season. What was he? 7-12? Not in a 4+ ERA. That wasn't a Sandy season coming off to Cy Young.
No.
So he was, I feel like he was overcompensating. I think maybe the pitch clock, the new rules got to, I don't know, something happened, but he wasn't himself. The shifting and then as obviously well,
that was the big the talk shifting. in the press box is that the shifting kind of, he's a ground ball pitcher and a power pitcher as well. So, you know, he's going to rely on the ground ball and the shifting kind of, you know, not, I'm saying drastically changed his statistics, but I feel like it did kind of like, you know, tinker a little bit with the way he goes about his day to day, his routine on the mound. So, but
and I feel like that's what affected
the thing. He lasted the whole season practically.
And I feel like that's what affected his arm. You know, that's why I think he might have been overcompensating. And again, when you're off your rhythm, you overcompensate. And it's like in anything, especially in sports and especially a pitcher. And that's how you get injuries. That's how you get hurt. You start doing things that you're not used to doing, you're not familiar doing, and your body's like, yo, I'm rejecting it. Now, you know, Sandy's gonna be out all season with the Tommy John. I think the fear is there with Yuri that something like that could have been, you know, either in that he could be going in that direction. And I think they're being very extra cautious with him. But I think if Yuri is back, just like how he was last season, I think he could be that number three guy, you know, that number three, four guy, maybe even a number two guy, because he has the stuff, you know, he has and he has the hype. Like we're banking on him being the next Sandy. So there is that. Hopefully that doesn't deter him too much. But
like,
Yeah, it's like a different version of Sandy, you know what I mean? So we're very, very hopeful that we'll get something Sandy-like coming from him. But I think my biggest hope here and who I'm counting betting on is Sixto. I think Sixto, we didn't mention yet, but I think him, he's going to – I feel like he's going to – I'm hopeful for the comeback, like to have it come to fruition. The kid hasn't pitched since 2020. It's been weird. He's never pitched in front of fans before, so this is going to be his first time this season at Marlins Park, which is crazy to think. I feel like he's got the stuff. I don't know what was wrong. I don't understand what took so long, but I feel like it's now or never, and I'm really hoping it's something happens now with him. Like he made the roster. He's on the opening day. He'll be there tomorrow. He's going to be in the bullpen, but I think that comeback is still coming for him. I think he's going to work his way from the bullpen.
Spot in the rotation. Yeah.
Yeah. That's got Sixto's name all over it. I mean, he's got the stuff, and if he can figure out how to get the stuff working, he's going to be in that slot. You know what I mean? And that's where I want to see, because he could be, man, when we're healthy, if we got a Yuri, a good Sixto, we got Sandy back, we have Braxton, we get some of these guys coming back and getting their confidence. It's like, yo, that's, again, could be nice. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm much more excited to see, even though on paper it doesn't look that good, but I'm much more excited to see how the Marlins pitching is going to do this season than anything else. That's what I'm the most looking forward to.
It's crazy how like in half a year, the Marlins and the buzz around the Marlins was there's so much depth. They have so much depth with pitching. And they're talking about, you know, using maybe Edward Cabrera as a trade piece because of like, you know, all these guys, even the emergence of Braxton Garrett and everything.
Yeah.
And now they're, as I mentioned, going into this segment of the episode, we're talking about guys, Ryan Weathers, Trevor Rogers, you know, the Sixto's comeback. So that's how depleted this rotation has been for Miami. You know, still though, on paper, when healthy, you know, Jesus is your number two. And then you have Yuri. And then from there on, that's where the depth comes in, the 4-5 spot. Yeah. Then you have guys like Edward, Braxton, Sixto, Ryan Weathers, Trevor Rogers, Max Meyer. But when Trevor Rogers gets boosted up to your number three going into 2024, that's concerning. So I'm falling more in line with you of your, I guess, prediction of what you're kind of feeling with the rotation compared to Gabe, who was on that last episode. He was very optimistic, which I truly appreciate. But at the same time, you got to look at, it's just that feeling. Yeah. It's just that feeling of like, what's going on here? What's going on with AJ Puck? How is he going to transition? you know, pitching kind of every day, being a power pitcher, you gotta have to take a little bit off that fastball and kind of, you know, elongate your career. I mean, your outing into 4 or 5 innings
at least.
You know, so and how are you going second time around the order, third time around the order? So it's, you know, there's a lot of things that are up in the air right now and being held, as I mentioned with Gabe, everything's being held right now on pins and needles. Very fragile foundation right now with this starting rotation. Bullpen, I'm not as concerned about. You know, I'm confident with the bullpen, and they found some good pickups as well. I think with Franklin Gutierrez,
you got a guy today.
You know, he's just as well. Yes, they made a move today. I think he was DFA'd.
I think so.
And it just and you know, he's in
my apologies for not having you here. Yeah.
No, yeah, I totally forgot about having that move here, but as well.
But what's it called? So you feel good about the bullpen. What about the back end of the bullpen? What about Tanner Scott? Because I feel like, you know, we went through a rotation of closers last season, and you know, he was last man standing, but like, are you good with him being the man this season? Like, you think it's gonna, I guess, do you think he'll still be the guy at the end of the season?
So here's the thing. You know, with Trent Tanner Scott, I feel like I kind of compared to basketball in a sense, how there's a really hot shooter and he's made like 4 or 5 3-pointers in a quarter, and his worst enemy is the end of the quarter, is the end of like, cause it kind of just, everything just stops. You kind of like, you know, you have to take that break. You're forced to. And that's kind of how I think of with Tanner Scott right now. And I'm hoping I'm wrong, is he's coming off an incredible ending to 2023. And he was reliever of the month, I believe, in September, NL reliever of the month. And, you know, very small postseason. You know, Marlins had a cup of coffee in the postseason. So you really couldn't see him, I guess, kind of, you know, be on full display, or, you know, especially with the long postseason, without a long postseason run. But I'm curious to see how this long break will treat him. More, I guess he actually has a full offseason to mentally, because it is a huge mental game being a closer. Huge.
100%.
So, yeah. 100%. So, full offseason to mentally prepare himself, full spring training to be one-on-one with Mel and kind of, you know, go one-on-one and hone in the craft and the mental aspect of being a closer, coming in, shutting the door, and instead of kind of learning on the fly like he did last season, kind of being thrusted into that position because, as we mentioned earlier in the episode, AJ Puk just didn't have the stuff. So, and Tanner Scott, we always saw that he had the stuff. Another power lefty, nasty slider, that perfect 2-pitch combination to be a dominant closer, especially in today's high velocity game in the MLB. So he has the stuff, and he showed that he has the stuff. So let's see how this offseason was a positive or a negative in terms of hindering his momentum from how we finished off 2023. But I'm confident in Tanner. I think he'll do great. He looks good. He looks confident. When I saw him in spring training, he seems happy and in a good mood. And I think he's going to be great to hold down the fourth and the ninth inning. That's kind of
It sounds like you're a little more confident than I am when it comes to the back end of the bullpen. So I appreciate it. I'll lean on your confidence I'll live vicariously through your confidence there. And overall, like I said, I'm a little more, you know, happy with the bullpen and everything. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Kevin Burrell for clearing it up there, Birch Smith, but also his YouTube picture is him and band. And I freaking love that picture.
Yes.
Kevin is like that for a minute now.
Yeah, I love Kevin.
if you don't follow Kevin, make sure you do, because he's fantastic, and that guy knows way too much about the Marlins for his age, but he's a beast. I'm gonna live vicariously through. Yeah.
No, he's great. I love Kevin. He's awesome to be around. You know, obviously, people, if you listen to Let Me Say Live, you know Kevin through his coverage with, you know, Pause Up podcast, and for his work with Fish on First, his Marlins coverage is there. And just shout out to the guys over there. They're great. They do good stuff over there. But that kind of, I guess, you know, ends our conversation with the Marlins pitching department. Let's wind this episode down. Let's kind of round this episode off with the offense, the hitting department.
Okay.
You know, I feel like majority of spring training, it was already kind of a given who was going to make this roster. There wasn't really a lot of competition per se. I know they had Trey Mancini. He got released. Kirk Casale was, you know, vying for a catching role, even though, but they already had Christian Betancourt in that trade. So he, that was just kind of more of a depth piece, but he's testing the waters in free agency. So everything's pretty much been set in stone, I feel like, for the Marlins and their opening day roster. For the infielders, I'm going to just break it down for you real quick here. We have Tim Anderson, Luis Arraez, Josh Bell, and Jake Berger. And then for outfielders, we have Jesus Sanchez, Nick Gordon, Abiseo Garcia, Brian De La Cruz, Jazz Chisholm, and Vidal Brujan. Vidal can play infield and outfield. He legit plays everywhere on the field. So, and then your catchers is Nick Fortes, Christian Betancourt, and that is pretty much your core of offense right there. That's the, you know, what going into 2024, Marlins have really haven't suffered any injuries in spring training, luckily, compared to what they've suffered in the pitching department. So I just told you the core of the offense, pretty much the everyday guys and the bench pieces. How do you feel? What's going on in Edwin's brain going into this season with that type of core?
You know, honestly, I at the beginning, I was like, man, we didn't make the moves. We didn't add any pieces. But, man, you know, like, I was kind of hoping for something. We didn't do it. But I like what we have. If it's weird. I don't know. Maybe it's just they beat me up with it and it's kind of grown on me. But I like Berger. I think he's going to be great. I'm hoping, you know, Anderson really locks down that shortstop and finds his form again, regains his form, because the dude was an all-star. He was a great player. I'm always going to remember him for that moment when, you know, at the Field of Dream game where he hits the walk-off and everything. Like, the guy's a baller, bro. I love it. And Luis Arraez is the best player on the team. I mean, hands down, he's our stud. He's the Venezuelan Tony Gwynn right now. That's what the comparison is, you know. So I like that. 100%. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Josh Bell, I like our infield. I actually really like Christian Betancourt. I liked what I saw in the Serie del Caribe when we were there, and when we saw him play for Panama. Yes. Yes. So I like what I've seen from him. I hope that he can really do some stuff, because hey, Nick Fortes could hit. Is his defense great? You know, we had Jacob Stallings last year who was supposed to be a gold glove, but that guy was making errors. That guy was playing like crap, and he couldn't hit anything. So, you know, kind of addition by subtraction here. Again, we got rid of that guy.
Certain part. The hitting is not. Guys can hit. But it's like Larai is not known for his glove. Josh Bell, you know, Anderson, we don't know. We're going to see, you know. And Berger is not the best of, you know, in terms of his, like, mobility. And especially being at the hot corner. So that's the concerning part, is the defensive side. Can they hit? Those guys can hit. And they have some power. Those guys with can Bell hit.
If they hit, I think we'll be okay. I think if they just keep it up and they hit, we'll be okay. In the outfield, really, man, it's all about, honestly, the biggest story in the outfield is not Jazz. It's not any of those guys. Abiseo Garcia, man. Like, my boy's got my last name, but he's got to figure it out, because he's on that Wang Chang. What was that? Wang? No, it was the Chin Taiwanese Man pitcher Wang? That we had, Chin Man Wang. He was like,
No, we're thinking of that's Chin Man Wang. He played for the Yankees. The guy who played for the Marlins, why am I drawing a blank? I was just talking about him.
I don't want to misrepresent it or sound.
To say the wrong name either. But he played from Baltimore. They got him from Baltimore. I know the name and everything. Yeah. Why am I drawing a blank?
It's escaping me. And I already look like a fool because I called him a bunch of other names. But anyway, guy played with the ski mask the whole time he was with the Marlins. You know what I mean? He was just robbing us blind because he never performed, never did anything. And it didn't work out for him. And right now, like, Abiseo Garcia is the next guy with the ski mask. He's just sitting out there in the outfield collecting the paycheck, getting paid a lot of money, and it's just we have to see something, because Garcia was an all-star. He can play. He was a good player. Like, I don't know what happened. Right. I don't know if it's Lone Depot Park or whatever, but, like, dude has just fallen off completely, and we're just, that's just a cash cow out there in the outfield. So there's going to be a big, big, big spotlight on this guy for him to be the man again and take over. He could lock down one of those. Okay, there you go. So I was close. So he can lock down one of those corner outfield spots for us. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we need, because we got Jazz locked down at center. And it's two corner outfields. Because, look, I like Jesus Sanchez and I like DLC, but I've never loved DLC and I've never loved Jesus well, Sanchez Gilles because I feel like we're both
3 year, 19 home runs.
Yeah, but like,
yeah.
But I feel like those guys had all the opportunity last year to really, like take over the position and end the discussion. You know what I mean? And I feel like here we are again, and we're still debating. So that's where I am at on the offense there. I know we got just like a couple minutes here before we got to get off. So I don't want to ramble too much about my disdain you know, what I wanted to do last season.
I want to piggyback off you real quick. It's funny you mentioned Avi, because Avi, well, just a quick little shout out again to Fish on First, Big Fish Small Pod with Danny Rodriguez. One of their episodes, he asked me who was my dark horse or breakout candidate or like one of those type of questions for 2024. And I picked him.
Yeah.
I picked Avi because, you know, for crying out loud, like what happened? Like, as you mentioned, he was a 20 home run guy, 80 RBI guy, you know. And as we're seeing here from Kevin, let's pull that up here in our stream. You know, I agree with you, Kevin. I don't expect to see Avi too much action in the outfield, but I don't. But he can be a guy that can hit against lefties. You got Nick Gordon, as you mentioned, who can play infield and outfield. But yeah, I see Avi in a platoon. I do not expect Avi to be an everyday player, but the drop off is insane, Edwin. The drop off is massive. I get it. The health has been a huge, you know, factor. But when he's been healthy, it's like so many rollovers, ground ball double plays, flyouts. It's like striking out runners, scoring positions.
Yeah,
like,
he's a bum.
you had a decade-long career prior to coming to Miami where you were a 20 to 30 home run type of guy who can give you 70 to 90 RBIs, where you were a fringe all-star player. We were overpaying for you, kind of, you know, and you couldn't even play half of that role. So that's where the frustration comes in. I still root for him because, like, you know, like that was an exciting signing when I thought, okay, they got a good player. Avi Garcia is a good player. And, you know, as we're seeing here with Kevin, he'll probably likely DH tomorrow. I don't mind him DHing with a lefty pitching. He's got pop still. He's still a strong guy. He can still play.
Look,
I don't care if he's
DHing. I don't care if he's playing second base, catcher, or if he's not. As long as he's doing something and he's hitting, that's all. Like, that would save us so much of a headache because we got guys that can play the corner outfields that are decent and they have good a good glove. Yo, he has to separate himself by being the bat. He has to be the guy who, unfortunately, they're looking to replace Soler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As that DH and that guy who can drive in runs and be a producer. So, I don't know. We'll see if he does it. I'm hoping maybe this is the season where Avi and Sixto are make their returns in the Marlins and everything is glorious again, and we'll see how it goes. But I'm excited about tomorrow. We'll see what happens. I'm just looking forward to it. And again, dude, just rock and roll, man. It's 2024. Let's go, baby.
Exactly. So last thing here, my final thought is, Marlins are relying a lot on bounce backs, health, and just everything's held right now on pins and needles. Everything's on a fragile right now. And that's all I'm going to say. But I'm so excited for the Marlins coming off a 2023 postseason appearance. Let's see if they can, you know, make history as a team, make the postseason for the first time in back-to-back years. So we'll see.
Yes.
It's a very tough division, but like as Edwin said in the beginning of the episode, everyone's in first place tomorrow. Everyone's at zero. Everyone's 0-0. So that's going to do it here, guys, for First Pitch 305, Season 2, Episode 4. I appreciate Edwin Garcia, the Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain for Lemon City Live.
I like the big episode. Lemon.
The big lemon. I'm gonna remember that one.
I like the big lemon. I might adopt that, but hey, but thanks for the invite.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, man. Thanks for the invite. Thanks for everybody tuning in. Thanks for the pause up guys doing the show before us. Thanks for you for putting this together now. And if you're watching, just tune in now. We got Puckett Send It In, the hockey podcast. So it's a big night for Lemon City, man. Thanks for everybody for joining us. And man, anytime you need me back on, bro, looking forward to it.
All right. You can catch us at lemoncitylive.com or wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Edwin Garcia. I'm Alex Aguirre. Opening day tomorrow. And remember, guys, let's go Fish.
Yeah.